Welcome to Young Turks, Jake, you Jedi Roll, and Domi Cost. What is going on? Okay, all right, let's calm down, everybody. Nomi, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, and thank you to the audience for letting us have Nomi. and obviously you guys paid for that, and Nomi's already done some wonderful work in bringing stories for us, including following the DNC race. And I think we're going to have an update on one of your stories tomorrow, because you keep on breaking them. If Nomi sees news, she says, I was wondering what would break first, your spirit or your body? Okay. all right. Obviously,
she does say that a lot.
I
thought that was weird.
Yeah, because she's in the news breaking business.
Yeah, it's like, I like this new reporter of ours, but she keeps quoting Bane. It's bizarre.
We have an amazing show for you as always. Of course, Michael Tracy is going to be in the second hour. One of my favorite stories in the second hour is, did racism affect Trump voters? Okay.
Love this story.
Yes, it is a great, great story, and they try to prove it out either way. Okay. We'll have the answers for you in the second hour. And of course, Donald Trump is going after President Obama's environmental record. And Lindsey Graham on a warpath that I find to be interesting, curious. I'm curious as to what he's trying to plot. It's pro-Trump or anti-Trump. We're going to dive into that. But the Ryan Care might have met its end today already. So we will explain that a little bit later in the program. And what do the Republicans actually want to do? And this is always fun. Later in the program, I'll be proven right.
How do you know the ending?
I'm trying to think of which story is he going to twist into confirming something he said. I don't know what it is.
Nostradamus.
The EPA story?
Yes, yes. We'll get to that.
Is it the rhino story? Yes.
Okay, hold on. Okay. Let's see what happens. Okay. And guys, as you might be able to tell if you're regular viewers of the Young Turks, we are having a slight issue with our background. Everything's going to be okay, and we'll fix it at some point. God bless. Go forward.
Okay, so we're going to be starting off with this?
Yeah.
Okay. Several days ago in the capital of Ethiopia, there was a fatal landslide. It was a rubbish landslide. Now, this is a waste disposal area that's been in use for half a century. Many people in that capital live around that to use it for salvage and things of that sort. But unfortunately, there was this landslide. As of this morning, 113 people died as a result of the landslide. 150 people are believed to have been in the area when it occurred, and the search for both survivors and bodies continues today. We also have the Dutch parliamentary election ongoing, but exit polls are in, and it's believed, the AP is reporting, that Prime Minister Mark Rutte is actually going to win. And in fact, Wilders, the extreme far right candidate, what people call the Dutch Donald Trump, not only did his polling sink leading up to the election, but he's believed to have underperformed even those polls. So probably good news from my point of view.
Yeah, well, so let me just jump in with two quick analysis of that. First of all, on Wilders, God bless you, Netherlands, for not being as crazy as we are.
Or, it's because they've legalized weed.
Maybe they're mellower and they're just calmer. Yeah. And my theory on Wilders losing is because of Steve King.
he got the King boost, boost.
The taint of King, if you will, stuck on Wilders and caused him to lose.
That's probably what it is.
Yeah, I don't think that's actually true, but I think it'd be fun if it were. And then on the rubbish story, man, just if you're out there somewhere, guys, and you don't live on a pile of rubbish that's collapsed on you, understand that there are much worse lives out there. And so appreciate what you have. Yeah. It'll make you happier, and it's so true. No matter how your day is going wrong, remember that story and go, yeah, I think I've got it a lot better than a lot of other folks in the world.
Yeah. Two other updates for you. An investigative unit in Australia has concluded that huge sections of the Great Barrier Reef died over just the last year as a result of overheated seawater. Obviously, we've been following this story. We know that there's large sections of bleaching going on in the Great Barrier Reef. But these were sections that had previously been estimated to have been immune to this sort of bleaching for at least three decades.
Wow.
Died over the course of just the last year. And additionally, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced today in a press conference that he believes that routine use of marijuana is, quote, only slightly less awful than heroin addiction.
Oh.
But don't worry, there's no crackdown on weed coming. He just thinks that you're basically heroin addicts.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's good to know that our attorney general is not attached to science in any way, shape, or form. Okay,
yeah.
Well, now we know. And then on the other story, I think climate change is going to, the consequences of climate change are going to happen a lot quicker than we realize. And part of the reason for that is that the scientists keep telling us, look, the things where we're warning you about dire consequences, those are our most conservative predictions. Mm. They say that over and over again because they don't want to seem like alarmists, and they are trying to in some way even react to the right wing by saying, look, here's my range of options and I'll give you the least scary. But what if it's in the middle? And then we get to those consequences quicker, which I think is beginning to happen.
Yeah. What's the fear of actually being alarmist? Like, people go into the streets and they protest about climate change, which they should be. Like, yeah. What happens? Like, corporations are like, oh no, we have to change our policies suddenly and share. That's what we want, right?
Yeah, it depends on your situation, right? If you're example I always use, I remember this random Newsweek article. There's a military guy driving with his family. B gets into the car. Should you be alarmist then? No, because crashing the car is worse than the bee sting. Calmly lowers the windows, everything's fine, the bee flies out. Okay.
Yeah.
In 9/11, a wife goes to a husband, they're both working in the towers, we're leaving right now, she's like, you're being alarmist. She's like, I will divorce you this minute if you don't leave. Okay? And they walk down, everybody else dies. Okay? So there is a time to be alarmist, there's a time not to be alarmist, and you gotta make the call. For example, if it turns out, as we reported yesterday on the show, 5% of all the terrorist attacks in America are from foreign-born Muslims, you probably shouldn't be alarmist and ban six majority Muslim countries from entering the country because it's not 95% of the problem. It's only 5% of the problem. If, on the other hand, your planet is depleting its ozone layer and it is dramatically affecting the temperature of the air and the water and then destroying the ecology we all need to survive, perhaps you should be a little alarmist.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a great reference to the ozone layer because alarmism over the depletion of the ozone layer led to action and largely, for the most part, fixed that problem the same way that we addressed acid rain. Mm-hmm. People took it seriously and we were able to fix it relatively quickly. But that's just the nature of science. Regular people believe that scientists are, they're biased and they're ideological. They're doing it for the money. They're doing it as a big hoax. But overall, most scientists are incredibly conservative in the way they pursue the truth and how quick they are to advertise their conclusions. Most people just don't know that.
And let's just last thing on this. Let's just review who's doing it for the money. The oil companies that are making tens of billions, sometimes hundreds of billions of dollars from making sure that we keep on drilling fossil fuels, or the scientists who are barely middle class.
Right.
Okay.
Underfunded. And if they are funded, those like two scientists who don't believe in global warming, oh, shocker, who's funding them? The oil companies funding their studies.
Yeah. You remember all those billionaire professors? Oh, yeah, neither do I. Okay. All right, so now I have the first story here. This is fun, although I enjoy that Brady Bunch look for a second. Okay, and I liked it better because of the situation. Jesus, always thinking. I see you, brother. Okay, I have dramatic news for you guys. If I have dramatic news, I have to yell it. So we have new numbers from Just Democrats. Remember, we recently partnered up with Brand New Congress. We'll start reporting unified numbers going forward, including today. Now, numbers are always fun when they're actually great. So first, how many supporters does the combined group have now? Will you look at this? 217,651 supporters.
Damn.
So they say that starting a party on the left, in this case within the Democratic Party, oh, well, I mean, are you really going to get any traction on that? How quickly have other wings of the parties gotten out to this kind of support? I mean, over 200,000 people this quickly. I mean, we started Just Democrats about a month ago. So, and a lot of these numbers are coming from that group. Okay, now money raised, hold. Over $1 million already. $1,024,387. Well, you know, a lot of the criticism of groups that pop up that are progressive, you don't have enough money, you'll never get enough money. Just like that, we've got some real money on our hands. And you know why? It's because of you guys. It's all small donors, because big donors are not allowed. You're not allowed to take corporate money. You're not allowed to take PAC money. So thank you guys. You know what you're doing? You're putting us on the map. You're putting progressives on the map. Now, a lot of the rest of the media, I got word earlier today, even before this announcement, saying, oh, that's real. That's real. We better pay attention, because this is going to go towards primarying establishment Democrats who are still doing the corporatist agenda and eventually beating Republicans. So how many donors have we had so far? 41,793. So there's a lot more people who have signed up for the party, but these are the people who are putting their actual money behind their actions as well. So by the way, justdemocrats.com is where you can go to donate, to sign up, and also to nominate. So we're getting real citizens to run, doctors, veterans, nurses, teachers, etc. So it's a real populist movement with the actual population. So from time to time, rarely we might have someone who's been involved in politics for a little bit of time, but an overwhelming majority are regular citizens who are leaders in their community. But come on, how many of those could there possibly be? How many nominations could there be? Well, I'm glad you asked.
Five or six, maybe.
Yeah. 8,387 people have already been nominated. This is a very serious group. A lot of the folks that worked here worked on Bernie's campaign. So they already know how to organize. They know how to put together campaigns. And there are four rounds of vetting. We're going to find the best candidates out there and we're going to run them. And it is going to be incredibly practical, pragmatic, and it is going to lead to victories. So by the way, 30 nominees have already gone through the vetting process and through candidate training. So if you think we're not coming, well, you got another idea coming to you. I believe we're the ones who knock, and soon corporate Democrats will be knocking on your door. So fun times.
I love this. I mean, this gets me so excited, especially because, you know, these races for the most part have traditionally been so expensive, but they don't need to be. We talked about this during the DNC race. You know, you are raising money for Justice Democrats from small dollars to run against these corporate Democrats who are running really expensive campaigns. And I think they're going to be shocked when they see that not only are these regular people going to beat them, but they're going to beat them with a lot less money and more effectively.
Yeah, it's really leveraging the change in technology and society, especially the internet. There's all these new tools that you can use to reach out to people to make your platform known and everything. But the way that we used to do things, how did they use that? They used that basically during the presidential campaign, someone like Obama maybe would raise a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And that was pretty much it. They saw it as a source for money, but it can be so much more powerful than that.
Yeah, part of the reason I'm wearing this shirt, we're the ones who knock, is because in this case, we're literally going to be knocking on doors. Mm-hmm. And I can give you many different examples of how that has worked. There's the most progressive Democrat in Hawaii took out the most conservative Republican in the state legislature of Hawaii. It was a Tea Party Republican in Hawaii, in Maui, and he beat him. He beat him by 26 points. 26 is an interesting common number that we keep running into. And how did he do that? He literally knocked on every door in that district three times. Mm-hmm. So you just work harder. So what Nomi pointed out in her coverage of the DNC chair race was that a lot of the consultants take huge commissions. The national Democratic consultants do. If you run expensive ads, especially TV ads. So they don't want you to do the most efficient thing. They are literally incentivized, not because they're bad people, but because they're incentivized to do the most inefficient spending. So they'll take your donations and they will spend a lot of it on TV, even though, hey, did it work for Hillary Clinton? She has spent Trump 2-1, mainly in TV, and it didn't work. It didn't work. His digital ads worked better. And so now there's the efficiency between the ads, but the most effective thing in the world is free, which is knocking on doors. We did that. I say we from time to time. I should be clear. This is me as a person who supports Justice Democrats, me as a person who supports Wolfpack. Obviously, I helped found both of those groups. So in the case of Wolfpack, they just ran a race in Connecticut for a state Senate race. Now, that was a giant 36-point lead the Republican had. It was a district that has been Republican for over 100 years. And they closed it to a 10-point race, meaning they made up, there it is again, 26 points. And that was just in a 4-month period. In November, the guy won by 36, and then they just had the election, and he only won by 10. They closed 26 points. Why? They knocked on doors. It is And how do we do that? That's why if you want to donate to justicedemocrats.com, that's fantastic. Go do that right now. But most importantly, sign up, be part of the party and volunteer, because with people power, we can actually win. Yes, we still definitely need money as well for infrastructure, but we know how to do this. We've done this in these different groups. It's not pie in the sky. In the case of Wolfpack, they won election after election. That was just to show people how big a lead they can close, right? Steve Valancourt was booted in New Hampshire. There's many other cases where Wolfpack kicked out six-term incumbents and others. Obviously, Bernie closed, you don't talk about 26, Bernie closed a 60-point lead on Hillary Clinton. Now, with the giant advantages she had, he didn't get over the top and win that race, but people are underestimating how an enormous, not really a comeback, but cover behind result that was for Bernie Sanders. He had almost no name recognition, he had all of it, and he closed a 60-point lead anyway. We can do this, and together we will do this, and we'll shock the world. Okay, I thought you were going to say
quick little note from academia. I don't know why nobody, I guess I know why it's not talked about, because the people who get paid to run those ads wouldn't like it. There's been a lot of studies of campaign ads. You know, there's almost no academic support for the idea that campaign ads matter over and above regular campaigning. There's almost no evidence that they actually significantly change the vote, which seems crazy, but that's the case.
I mean, it can send it over the edge in like a moment of where they're tied, or it could break something. You know, there's like five instances that are notable in history when that happened.
Yeah, you can run like the Daisy Cutter ad,
right,
or something where it's totally different.
Dukakis on a tank. Exactly.
That's true.
But remember, those were also blowouts, so they probably would have lost anyway. Yeah. I'm not sure those made the difference.
It was just more embarrassing.
It was more embarrassing. But it's politics 101. People to people contact. The first thing they teach you in politics is you have to connect with people. You have to get on the phone and call your friends. Your friends have to call people. You have to go knock on doors. Somehow the Democratic Party forgot about this. Like, you know, they're not exempt from human relationships.
Yeah. And here's who is not helped by those studies. Democratic consultants who are making millions of dollars.
Yeah. And look, I will stop talking about those studies if they pay me a small fraction of millions of dollars.
Okay. All right, let's move forward.
Okay, let's do it. Last night, Rachel Maddow reported on the first look that we've had so far at Donald Trump's taxes. Now, not his actual tax returns, the huge pile of papers it would be. We got two pages of the 2005 returns, which I'm going to say conservatively is probably about 0.5% of his total pages of taxes of the last decade. But that's what we have, and so we're going to break it down. Trump and his wife Melania paid about $38 million in federal taxes that year, about a quarter of their $150 million in income, which right off the bat seems like, wow, they're 25% sure doesn't seem like exorbitant taxes. We keep hearing that we're the most overtaxed country in the world, and he's made $150 million there. That doesn't seem really high. Also, bear in mind that Trump's wrote off about $100 million in business losses in just that year.
Does he ever have less than $100 million in losses a year?
Wow. I mean, and look, and we can add that. We don't know if that's the same thing that he used for 18 years to effectively pay no federal taxes, or if that was a new set of failures that he was profiting off of. We don't know for sure.
He's literally in the business of bad
failing businesses. Yeah. Failing businesses is a profitable business.
He's going to do it with our government, too.
Probably. Now, the most interesting part about these two pages that we have isn't anything illicit that's in the return, but it's when you look at what happened in his return and you match it up with his platform, what he wants to accomplish as a politician, then you get into dangerous territory. Because the Trumps paid relatively little ordinary income tax, about $5.3 million, a very small fraction, a few percentage points of their income. But they did pay $31 million in the alternative minimum tax, a huge portion of all the tax that they paid. Now, this is a tax that was set up in, like, I think, 69 to make sure that the richest Americans can't use the wealth of loopholes and write-offs and all of that to effectively pay no tax, a problem that was widespread at that point in history. So now, as a result of the AMT, they had to pay $31 million. And would you look at it? He wants to get rid of the AMT. Let's bring up this document. This is one of his campaign documents talking about his tax policy. And it says that they are going to get rid of the alternative minimum tax. Now, if Donald Trump had his way, he would have paid just a couple of percentage points of tax. Now, ask yourself over the last few years, What percentage did you pay? Were you able to get away with paying 3% in federal taxes? No. And if this change happens, it won't benefit you, but it will benefit Donald Trump and people like him quite a bit.
What I understand is this is the Koch brothers' strategy, and they hate Donald Trump. So I'm curious to see if the Koch brother wing of the party has had an olive branch with the establishment or the Donald Trump establishment.
So there's no good guys between the Koch brothers and Donald Trump, even though they're fighting. But the Koch brothers have record-breaking greed. They actually could have taken the grand bargain. They could have ordered the Republican Party to take Obama's grand bargain. They would have cut Social Security. They would have cut taxes on the rich. This is what they'd been planning for all along. They just thought, no, we can get more. Mm-hmm. And they wouldn't let the Republicans do it, even though it was a great deal for them. I'm so glad that they had that greed in that case, because the grand bargain was a disaster.
Yeah.
So now, in this case, yeah, they're getting unbelievable tax breaks from all the things that Trump is doing. But they don't like the idea that he would do an import tax, because they actually import a lot of their stuff in. And there's a couple of other issues, including trade, and that's related to the import tax, but other things like TPP, which is not necessarily tax related, but that the Koch brothers want, where they're like, no, wait a minute, we don't agree. So what the Koch brothers want is everything.
Yeah.
They want all the tax cuts that Trump is proposing, plus all of their favorite stuff.
Which a lot of the other candidates probably would have given them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. And Trump might be cutting these taxes more to the bone than maybe Rubio would, maybe. But Rubio would have given every single line item that the mm-hmm. Koch brothers wanted.
Yeah, the
so there's no
tax
winners
be
here.
Gone and-
yeah, like the rest of the Republican Party, once Trump finally exits the White House, will say like, oh, Donald Trump, oh, he's not like us. Right. No, he is exactly like you guys. Yeah. You guys argue for the same exact tax deals. In fact, you'll vote for it and you'll love voting for it. Yeah. Watch, I'm telling you ahead of time. They'll all love voting mm-hmm. for this stuff. Okay, now let's just take a quick moment here to note that Trump did this. He leaked it. Okay, now I don't know that for sure, but even David K. Johnston, the reporter who got it, said it might have been him. The reason I say that it is, in my estimation, likely to be him is because this is the most favorable thing you could have possibly found in Donald right. Trump's tax mm-hmm. returns. Conveniently, the two pages that are not itemized, that don't tell you any of the details, the 1 year where he seems to have made money and actually paid some taxes, is the 1 year that's leaked with the two pages that are the most favorable to him.
Yeah.
And if Donald Trump sending stuff like this to people in the past anonymously, again, I had to study all this during the campaign. He does it all the time. Yeah. This is Trump 101. In fact, I believe the last time that they got the Trump tax returns during the campaign, remember that's right. when we found out he didn't pay tax for 18 years. That actually had a lot of stories that were favorable to him, and it eased the pressure from people asking for all of his taxes. Mm-hmm. And one report said that it appeared that it was mailed from Trump Tower. Mm-hmm. So this is Trump 101. Now, even so, if the guys who love Trump out there, they look at this and they go, oh yeah, he might have 100 million business losses, but ha, lib, see that, what a great businessman, he made $150 million. Okay, let's just break that down for one quick second. Remember, he claims to have $10 billion.
Right.
Okay. Now, if that was true, and it's been true for a while, and it is back in 05, I'll grant you that, okay? So, but let's start with that premise. $150 million would be 1.5% return. So that's all of his businesses, all of his wealth, and all of the investment money, and it got you 1.5% return from this business genius? Now, look, he doesn't have anywhere near 10 billion. He doesn't even have a billion.
Yeah, right? Less than that, because he had to pay taxes, thankfully. It's like 1% return.
So that's, now you can say, hey, that was a little while back, and even if you're the biggest Trump supporter and you think you believe him 100%, good luck with that, by the way, and you think he has 10 billion now, what did he have in 05? 5 billion, 7 billion? I mean, he didn't make all of it in the last 10 years, right? So even so, whatever you look at it, it's actually, if he were telling the truth, a pretty crappy rate of return.
Yeah.
And that's during The Apprentice, too. Right. When he was supposedly making money off of all this licensing of The Apprentice in his name.
And that's the one he probably cherry picked as his best year.
Yeah. Yeah, look, I would have loved to have had more of it. It's unfortunate. I think the way that it was managed in terms of the rollout of this information was poorly done, I would say. But hopefully it at least shed some light on the importance of the alternative minimum tax. I mean, it's a It's a part of the tax code that has some problems. More and more people are starting to find themselves as a part affected by it in a way that it wasn't originally designed to. But destroying it would be incredibly favorable for some of the richest people in the country, as well as things like the estate tax, all of that. We've got lots of things to worry about coming out of the Trump administration every week. But when the tax plan finally drops, I think that is going to be one of the scariest parts. I previewed more than a year ago his proposed tax plan, and it is insanity. It makes the 8 or 10% fair tax look like a progressive proposal. And so we have that to look forward to. I do want to talk about one thing that also happened in 2005 that Trump got up to. This is a story that broke about in July of last year, I believe. But it helps to explain how the rich can afford to not pay taxes. How do they actually set this up? Look at what he was able to do. Donald Trump was able to deduct $39.1 million from his federal income taxes in that year by pledging not to build houses on a New Jersey golf course he owns, according to public records. An appraisal conducted for the 2005 transaction determined that the land was worth almost $50 million if it could be split into 33 estates, but just $10.4 million as a golf course. And tax law lets property owners impose permanent conservation restrictions and then claim it as a charitable deduction for the reduction in value. So he had a golf course. Theoretically, he could have built things there, said that he's not going to, and suddenly millions and millions of dollars disappears off of his tax bill.
Yeah, I remember when I got to deduct $39 million from my taxes for not building something.
No. Who's this tax lawyer? Yeah. This guy's a genius.
Well, yeah. Actually, they interviewed his tax lawyer during the campaign. I don't know if he had the same one in 05, but the one left over from his father, Fred Trump. Mm-hmm. And the tax lawyer said he didn't often ask very many questions and was not well versed. Ivana would ask more questions than he would. And when they asked about his father, he's like, no, Fred was a smart man. Asked a lot of questions. Oh, but Trump would just come in and Donald Trump would just come in and go, make taxes lower. But you don't have an incredibly experienced, expensive accountant who can find these tax deductions for you, so you pay no taxes. Yeah. The rich do, like Donald Trump, and then they get this stuff and then they rub it in your face, go, I'm a smart man. That's why I didn't pay any taxes. And then claims to be patriotic because he made you pay the taxes.
And then they lobby. Then they take the money they saved by not paying taxes to lobby Congress so that more rich people don't have to pay taxes.
Yeah, that's the good system that they've set up for them, is that they can get a crappy 1.5% return on their actual business activity, but the return that they get when they buy a politician is far, far better.
Yeah, and then by the way, Trump has also bragged about that. Remember when he was on the Republican stage, he said, I paid off all these guys and they did whatever I wanted to. And so he brags about being crooked and not paying his fair share. I guess if you're a sucker, you like that and you think, oh, that's the guy that ripped me off. That guy's really smart and I'm an idiot. I'm gonna vote for him. Okay, be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Okay, moving on to another big story that dropped today. Today, the Department of Justice announced four indictments connected to the massive hack of Yahoo, with two of those arrested for the hack being officers in the FSB, the Russian successor to the KGB. The hack, which the DOJ said was initiated in January of 2014, affected at least 500 million Yahoo accounts. Some of the stolen information was used to, quote, obtain unauthorized access to the contents of accounts at Yahoo, Google, and other webmail providers. Understand that they got not just the contact information, email address and all that, but also passwords, including accounts of Russian journalists, US and Russian government officials, and private sector employees of financial, transportation, and other companies. And again, they were able to, over the course of the past couple of months, make multiple arrests. Now they have four indictments. This is not the first time Yahoo has had problems like this. It's been breached at least twice. And the company previously said that a September 2014 breach was state-sponsored, but declined to identify who it believed was responsible. So that's a separate hack. Potentially we'll have information in the near future.
Oh, well, luckily the Russian government doesn't kill Russian journalists who doesn't agree with information they might have gotten about their whereabouts. Oh, right, they do. And so this is a pretty devastating hack. And not only that, they have information about other Russians, and they have information about American officials. Mm-hmm. So it appears that we're getting outplayed a little bit in cybersecurity. We're not winning with this anymore. Okay, this is a mess. We're losing. And
And there are companies too. That's the craziest thing, is that these companies are headquartered in America, and they should, you know, they're the ones who have always said, well, we'll help the government, but we've really got a much more secure system than the government does. So if the government's failing and the companies that are supposed to be better are failing, how is Russia, like, who are these masterminds?
Yeah, and it's, look, there are government officials included in here, but it's also widely considered that this might be more focused on sort of financial crime, getting information about businesses, access to businesses, and things of that sort, something that has been quite common coming out of both Chinese and Russian hackers in the past. And I just want to be clear, because when people see a headline these days that says Russian hackers, they immediately think, oh, it's another one of those Trump stories. So far as we know, this has absolutely nothing to do with Donald Trump. The hack happened in the beginning of 2014. So don't worry, your ego's not on the line. You're allowed to care about this particular act of cybercrime.
But these guys might be fired, the DOJ.
That's also possible, yes. Yes.
But to John's point, this is the first cybercrime operation linked to the Russian government's intelligence apparatus.
Yes.
So it's a little different than the past cyber crimes. And to Nomi's point, the Russians are terrific at technology. I think it's a really funny broad way of saying it. They're good at tech. tech, really good. Like Bush, like. Anyway.
Incubator.
Right. But the Russian nationals and sometimes Russian Americans are at the top of the high frequency trading market as well. Mm-hmm. And so in terms of tech, we're not winning anymore. Come on, America, our hackers can be better than their hackers, right? We should be number one in hacking. Now look, I'm not saying we need to hack them, although I'm sure our—
We do.
Of course, our intelligence guys hack them too. It's not like we're totally innocent. But man, in terms of cybercrime, yeah, the Russians and the Chinese are going to work on our homes here. And in Silicon Valley, I'm not sure they would consider Yahoo their best. But
no.
Sorry, Yahoo.
Sorry, Marissa.
Okay, but obviously this is not good news for them. But Marissa Mayer and Yahoo celebrating these arrests, because it is the American government at its best actually working and bringing people to justice.
Yeah. Yeah, to the last point, did anyone else see these stats and then think, wow, there's still 500 million accounts on Yahoo? That seems a lot.
The first thing I thought, I was like, did I ever have a Yahoo account?
I did.
I don't know.
It was in high school.
I have an AOL
God
knows account what they still.
Found. Oh, really?
For spam, yeah.
Oh, geez, yeah. Okay, I'm going to blog about that on my GeoCities page. Anyway, do we want to take our first break?
Yes, we do.
Okay,
yes,
that's
we
probably
do.
A good idea.
I don't know why, but every comedian I know has an Earthlink account. So random. No one else.
What is an Earthlink?
No one else. But like,
it was
like,
another one of those.
Like 5 out of 7 comedians have Earthlink accounts. Only God knows why. Okay, when we come back, Lindsey Graham's on the warpath. Is he going after Trump? We'll look into that. And is Ryan Kerr already dead? We'll tell you when we return. Back on the Uncharged, it's working again. They said it couldn't be done.
I said it couldn't be done.
Okay, who's got the best technical staff in America? Well, okay, I shouldn't get carried away, but the studio crew is awesome.
They're better than Russia. Russia.
No, don't encourage him, dude. Don't encourage him. All right, anyways. That's right. You know why it wasn't working in the beginning? The Russians.
Russian hackers.
Okay.
They didn't want that American flag floating. They tried to change it out.
Yeah.
They should like it. It's shredded. Is that their thing? I mean.
All right. Eldo Wane Chingon agreed with you guys. He also wrote in, the most surprising part of this story is that 500 million people still have Yahoo accounts, but probably not anymore. Anyway, Floricita says, Nomi, certified badass reporter in the studio. It's a power panel. I love it.
I didn't know that the certification finally came through.
It did.
Cool.
It's framed already.
Alex C. writes in, over 200,000 joined the party in just over a month. Sounds like the start of a revolution. Damn straight. JusticeDemocrats.com. TW3 says, I did quite a bit of door-to-door canvassing in the We Are the Ones Who Knock shirt. That's awesome. So by the way, shoptyt.com. I'm not saying anything except for the URL I just gave you. Shoptyt.com. Okay, I love this shirt. Sometimes I go to Bennett meetings in this shirt, and then people are like, oh, okay. I'm like, that's right. Anyways, tytnetwork.com/go to help hire journalists like Nomi, which you guys did.
So grateful.
Thank you guys. We had Jordan on last night. We're going to have Michael Tracy on. in the next hour as well. And Gail from California chipped in $25 and Ali from California chipped in $50. Is that our Ali?
I'm gonna guess no.
Okay. He's working.
Yeah, he's busy.
All right, what's next, John?
Okay, more for you. Donald Trump has now lost almost all of his former defenders for his claim that the former president, Barack Obama, wiretapped him during the last election. In fact, those who would have knowledge of this, have also dropped off. The Republican head of the House Intelligence Committee had this to say about Trump's claim.
About the issue with the president talking about tapping Trump Tower, that evidence still remains the same, that we don't have any evidence that that took place. And in fact, I don't believe, just in the last week of time, the people we've talked to, I don't think there was an actual tap of Trump Tower. President Obama wouldn't physically go over and wire.
Sorry about that problem there, but basically making clear that if there is evidence, the House Intelligence Committee doesn't have access to it. We're going to attempt to go to this one. So that's a Republican head of the committee. We also have the senior Democrat largely echoing the same point.
The claim that President Trump made that his predecessor had wiretapped he and his associates at Trump Tower. Thus far, we have seen no basis for that whatsoever. We still want the Justice Department to respond to our letter. We've given them until March 20th. We're both willing to use compulsory process if that's necessary. I do think it's incumbent, if we get to March 20th and we have the testimony, I think we all expect from the director that there was no substance to the accusation that Barack Obama illegally wiretapped Trump Tower, that the president explain himself. I think this... You can't level an accusation of that type without either retracting it or explaining just why it was done. And I think that I think there are, from a national security perspective, great concerns if the president is willing to state things like that without any basis, because the country needs to be able to rely on him, particularly if we have a crisis that is an external crisis, as every president does within their term of office. So I think it is a serious matter, and I appreciate the chairman's willingness to have an open hearing on this, and I think the testimony will be very important.
So we're going to have Lindsey Graham going on the warpath over this in just a second, but just briefly, it is amazing that he claimed that the former president broke a federal law.
Right.
And conducted illegal surveillance of him. And now we just have to be like, oh, kids will be kids. There's probably no evidence, but let's let him slide. Can you imagine if Barack Obama had come into office and then claimed that George W. Bush was wiretapping his home during the campaign?
But that's, I mean, if you think about it, this is Trump 101. Everything is deflection, deflect away from the fact that he is actually, you know, his own intelligence issues. This is all look over there, look over there. I just don't think it works in government the way it did on the campaign trail.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I there's of course a great chance it's going to backfire because there are people like Senator Lindsey Graham, even from his own party, who are saying, no, I want to find out exactly what happened. Because if there's a warrant, that means if Trump is right and there's a warrant, even if they ask for a warrant, that means they thought there was a serious criminal investigation of someone at Trump Tower. Mm. Now that's very interesting.
Yeah.
But he's too stupid to figure out that he's opening up that can of worms. Mm-hmm. And he's also too stupid to realize he's actually the president. And if he thought that the former president was wiretapping him, he could just ask someone. Because he's the president. You could just go to the intelligence officials, or as Bush used to say, my intelligence guy. Right? And say, hey, well, what happened with the wiretap?
Yeah.
So this is a really knuckleheaded move of him. And that if, and another reason why it's stupid is it forces now a Republican chairman to come out and do a press conference saying, no, the president has no evidence to support his claims. He's forced into doing that.
Yeah.
God, it's so short-sighted of Trump.
It makes him look weak. When he can't control his own party, which we all know he can't, mm-hmm. that just makes him look weak then.
Well, the damage is mitigated a little bit by the nature of his party, how much people defer to authority. I saw a poll, a percentage of Republicans who believe that Obama ordered illegal wiretapping of Trump, 60%. And this is after a week of even Republicans saying, come on, there's no evidence of that. You can't just say that. More, a majority believe it. But as we said, Lindsey Graham not letting this issue off the hook, not letting it die. Here he's claiming that there could be subpoenas coming.
In terms of the letter we wrote, I want an answer. We asked the FBI and Department of Justice last week for any evidence of a warrant that would allow wiretapping. I hadn't heard a thing.
You said if that doesn't happen, the FBI is about to screw up big time. What happens if they don't comply?
Well, Congress is going to flex its muscle here, and you see that all over the place. We'll issue a subpoena to get the information. We'll hold up the Deputy Attorney General's nomination until Congress is provided with information to finally clear the air as to whether or not there was ever a warrant issued against the Trump campaign. I think if we don't get it today, the Congress is going to ramp up the pressure.
I think Graham is trolling Trump. Remember, he briefly ran against him, and Trump made a lot of fun of him.
Yeah.
Trump's got a lot of enemies out there on both sides. If you're looking not to get impeached, it's not the way to go. But anyway, that's for another day. For today, Lindsey Graham insisting that they give him any information about any warrant that they even requested, it couldn't possibly help Trump. So if they find evidence that there was a warrant, well, that means they had a lot of evidence, right? And so Graham's he's a Republican, not looking to help Trump here. He's like, hey, I'm curious, what was this warrant about? And I've said from day one, just because there is no evidence that there was a warrant doesn't mean they didn't request a warrant. Mm-hmm. The Guardian has reported already back in January that they did request a warrant and it was turned down. And you request a warrant when you're concerned there's criminal activity in Trump Tower. You don't do that lightly, and if they requested a warrant, it's not illegal. It's not Obama hiding in a microwave with a camera. Okay, that is the FBI saying, "Hey, federal judge, I have all of this evidence, and I think there's a criminal in Trump Tower, and I'd like to wiretap him."
Yeah,
middle of an election, that means you've got a world of evidence. Now they turned it down if the Guardian is correct. So apparently, not enough evidence. But the more that Lindsey Graham keeps digging, the more trouble Donald Trump could be in.
Exactly. Now, other allies of Donald Trump have also had to flail to defend him. And before I referenced it, basically, is you have a child and you have to just excuse its behavior. Look at the lengths they have to go to explain why Trump wasn't wholly inaccurate in his original tweets. Here, you're going to see Sean Spicer.
That it was, wiretapping. That spans a whole host of surveillance types of options. The House and the Senate intelligence committees will now look into that and provide a report back. He doesn't really think that President Obama went up and tapped his phone personally. I think, but I think there's no question that the Obama administration, that there were actions about surveillance and other activities that occurred in the 2016 election. That is a widely reported activity that occurred back then. The president used the word wiretap in quotes to mean broadly surveillance and other activities during that. And that is, again, something, it is interesting how many news outlets reported that this activity was taking place during the 2016 election cycle and now are wondering where the proof is.
Because that didn't happen.
But what do you mean they're reporting it? Because your president is the one who said that happened. Mm-hmm. So that's why they reported it. It's not like they made it up. You made it up. And I love the new, it's not, guys, it's okay. It's not wiretapping. It's wiretapping.
Mm-hmm. And what does that mean? Whatever we need it to mean based on whatever Trump did today.
Is there like a legal reason why they went like this versus saying it?
No, it's of course not. There is no legal thing to this. Oh, your Honor, will you please recognize the air quotes?
That audio tape is not admissible in court because we can't tell what he's doing with his fingers.
Yeah, no. In other words, what they're saying there is, don't take the president literally. Take him seriously. That's a quote they've said before, meaning like, hey, treat him with great respect, but don't actually believe what he says. When he says wiretapping, he means wiretap.
Does this play into the Preet Bharara stuff, you think? The Preet Bharara?
Yeah.
The U.S. attorney was looking into Trump. Do you think that they're connected?
It is, of course, very, very hard to know. But I believe that the things that they were asking Preet Bharara to look into, like there was formal requests to look into his conflicts of interest.
Right.
And now, on the other hand, his jurisdiction includes Trump Tower, and hence if they were going through Barrara to get to Trump Tower, and that got unearthed in the middle of this mess, that might be the case as well. So it's very hard to know, obviously, because nobody's talking about what the internal investigations at the Department of Justice were.
But theoretically, if they approved of him earlier on, several months ago, they fire him now. If he's an actual source of information for that, it seems like kicking his ass out of D.C. probably not a great way to get him to defend you.
And let us also, before we leave this story, note how awesome this graphic is.
I know.
So that
Ali was very excited to make it, and it's great. Trump doesn't look like he's really all that mad about the situation.
You see, he's straddling him, and there's some sort of sleeper hold there, and Trump's trying to tap out. Okay.
Fish tattoo.
Okay. Yeah. Trump has never looked as badass, even though he's losing that fight. Yesterday, Breitbart released damaging audio tapes of Paul Ryan being disloyal to our new president. And today, amidst an uncertain future for the Obamacare repeal bill, Paul Ryan is, in a very subtle way, attempting to fight back. He's using this terminology now, fighting back in this way. He said this: obviously, the major components of the bill are staying intact because this is something we wrote with President Trump. This is something we wrote with the Senate committee, and that we wrote it with President Trump. President Trump was co-author is terminology he's used a little bit over the last 24 hours. And of course, we know that the plan is either we pass it or theoretically we have this plan B, where if we can't get it passed, then Trump is going to attempt to distance himself from it, minimize the political damage that can be done to him as a result of the failure, and let Obamacare fall apart under its own weight or something to that effect. And Trump seems very willing, or at the very least, Steve Bannon seems very willing to let Paul Ryan go down in flames. But it looks like Paul Ryan is going to try to drag Trump into those flames with him if possible.
Well, so there's two parts of the story. First was that unprecedented attack against Paul Ryan on Breitbart. So that was clearly the White House, full frontal assault against the Speaker of the House of their own party. Not only did they throw Ryan under the bus with the audio tape and saying he was disloyal to Trump and having all the Trump voters get mad at Paul Ryan, then number two, they said, he bungled this and it's a mess and it's not going to pass. So it was already done. This version of the Republican healthcare bill will not pass. But number three, they said repeatedly in that article, clearly leaked by Steve Bannon / Donald Trump, that Ryan should not be Speaker of the House anymore.
Yeah.
They went for a kill shot. They're looking to end his career. Mm-hmm. So now Paul Ryan comes back and goes, "Wasn't me. I co-authored this with dumbass Donald Trump. If this thing goes under, it's also Donald Trump's fault."
He also said the Senate leaders too. He threw them to some extent.
Yes, because today the Senate leaders go to the White House, the Republican Senate leaders too. And Donald Trump basically says to them, "We're done with this one. This version sucks. Cenk Uygur and the Young Turks were right about it." Okay, maybe you left that part out.
And they specifically attacked the House version of the bill, saying that it needs changes. I have a couple quotes that came out of that meeting, actually. One advisor to a group of senators met at the White House. One advisor to a senator present at the meeting said that acknowledgement was simply that they don't have the votes to pass this in current form. Another senior Republican aide to a senator in the room said the White House is, quote, definitely looking at pretty big changes to the Ryan bill.
And now all of a sudden it's the Ryan bill.
It's hot potato. They're throwing it like to the White House, back to Congress. A senior administration official confirmed that the White House has continued to advocate for changes to the bill. I included this because of our previous conversation yesterday. Changes to the bill that will help secure conservative votes in the House, but also some tailored to moderates' concern. And that gets to the narrow tightrope that they have to walk. It's not even a tightrope. I don't know how that you do this. You take a bill that some hate because it's not conservative enough, some hate because it's too conservative, and try to simultaneously make it worse in both regards.
Right.
That's a difficult path to tread.
And convince 535 members that one of these is the option.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This was done on arrival a year ago. I mean, I don't understand how Paul Ryan, knowing very well that these people couldn't could not woo over their districts and it was an electoral disaster, why he was willing to work with Trump at all.
Yeah.
Like, there's some things you have to take a stand, but you have to be a Lindsey Graham at one moment, and that was it.
Well, no, I hear you, but Nomi, they never had a choice because Paul Ryan and the knucklehead Republicans were the ones who said, what did they do? I think they did 55 votes to repeal Obamacare when they knew that it didn't matter when Obama was president. So now he's stuck. He pretended he was going to repeal it all along. And he had no battle plan for winning over conservatives and moderates at the same time. Mm-hmm. He had no battle plan for giving all the money to his donors like he planned all along and screwing over the poor and screwing over the uninsured and the middle class and still winning elections. Mm-hmm. He never had a plan. Yeah. So, you know, we talk about how dumb Donald Trump is and how he bungled this. But Paul Ryan, for all his wonkishness, allegedly, is not that much brighter. I mean, here's a guy who just did a press conference a couple of days ago talking about like, oh, in Obama's version of healthcare, the healthy pay for the sick. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's everybody's version of healthcare. That's called health insurance. And he doesn't even recognize it. He's so stupid. He did a press conference like showing how dumb he is. Mm-hmm. Like he's like, I got a press conference here. Yeah. Obama thinks 2 + 2 = 4, right? So, and he thought he was brilliant.
Take a look at my PowerPoint.
So, and so they've all bungled this because they're bunglers. Yeah. Yeah. That's what they do. Now, how are they going to try to thread that needle? But before I get to that, actually, one more fun thing. I like that they're calling it the Ryan bill. Now, when it was first announced, it was Trumpcare.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you remember, Obama at one point said, I don't mind that they call it Obamacare because when it works, then I'll get credit for it, right? He's like, you'll know it's working when they stop calling it Obamacare. Mm-hmm. And for a brief while, like during the 2014 elections, they're like, well, I mean, like, oh, Mitch McConnell. He was like, it's not Obamacare, it's Connect in Kentucky.
Yeah.
And he pretended to be in favor of it, right?
It's also
the most popular state. It's the state with the highest enrollment.
That's right, because there's a lot of poor white folks in Kentucky who use, and middle class people who use Obamacare. So now they're like, not Trumpcare, we're not Ryan Care. That's how you know it's unpopular. Okay, so how in the world are they going to fix this? So I was right about this yesterday when I thought this was the road they were going to go on. This meeting with the Republican senators and Trump confirms this. So they've got this problem where the moderates say, hey, I need more for prices to be lower for senior citizens because they're big voters in my districts. Mm-hmm. And I can't have them being thrown off of insurance. Mm-hmm. And so I need that to be extended and I need prices to be lower. Now, on the other hand, conservatives are saying, who are funded by all the donors, are saying, no, we want Medicaid expansion to be cut earlier.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Now, well, that's untenable. You can't have both those things. Can't. So you got to choose. And which way is more likely to pass? Well, the Senate Republican plan is choose conservative, screw over the moderates. Well, I mean, there's the filibuster. You can't get 60 votes, right? Like, we don't need 60 votes. That's for idiot Democrats who play by the rules. So the proposal is that Mike Pence, as the head of the Senate, comes in and goes, even though reconciliation, this is the technical way that they would pass this bill so that it only needs 50 votes, is only for budgetary matters, and this is clearly not for just budgetary matters, doesn't matter. We just rule that it is. Mike Pence comes in, gavels the session, and goes, I've now decided that everything is budgetary. So in other words, they would kill the filibuster. So the Democrats would be then powerless. Now, when the Democrats even whispered of not following the filibuster in some
limited circumstances,
they were like, how dare you, the beloved Senate traditions. Now that they're in charge, they're like, Senate traditions, who cares, idiot Democrats? Now we're going to end that. And the whole point is they can afford to lose 2 Republican senators and still pass it because they have 52. And if they hold the conservatives, which are larger than the moderates, maybe they could squeeze it in. But even so, very, very hard because there are actually a good number of Republicans. They're not really moderate. They're all right-wingers, right?
Comparative.
But Republicans who are basically saying, I've got too many senior citizens in my state. Now, you're telling me this is going to be a little bit cheaper for 21-year-olds, but some of the 64-year-olds are going to pay 750% more.
Yeah, 21-year-olds don't vote.
That, yeah, like, no,
74-year-olds vote.
For them.
Yeah, so they were always going to lose Susan Collins of Maine. She was never going to go for these draconian things, but she's among the very few moderates. But there's a whole bunch of guys in the middle, like about 9 or so, who are like, do I really want to lose the next election? Mm-hmm.
Well, and there are some in the House too, specifically saying that this leaves too many people in my district without health insurance. And if they do go in that direction of making it more conservative, more draconian, that only becomes a more salient argument. It can't necessarily get to the 21 or 23 Republicans in the House you need to tank it, but the worse you make it for senior citizens, for the poor, that could potentially balloon that number.
Are there going to be any Democrats? Is there going to be a McCaskill or a Joe Manchin who say that they don't want a filibuster in the Senate? They've come out and said that they...
So far, they're holding the line, and every Democrat says they're opposed to this Republican proposal. Now, that doesn't mean they're going to stay opposed.
That's true. Yeah. Mm.
So they could probably lose three Republicans pretty easily, maybe more. I would be shocked if Manchin didn't flip at the end and vote with Trump, because Manchin's basically a Republican at this point. In fact, he helps Republicans more than Democrats, because he'll flip on crucial votes and then give them cover and go, it was bipartisan. My Democratic friend Joe Manchin in West Virginia is a coward and decided, oh, Trump won my state by too wide a margin, and so I'm going to run towards daddy, is going to probably go over, and hence they could lose at least one more vote. But, I mean, be careful what you wish for. Even if they won that, which I don't, at this point, it's too early to tell. Don't write anything in stone. I don't think they're going to be able to do it, because remember, they're bunglers. So I think that unless someone who really knows what they're doing takes charge, corrals all these idiots, and tells them to shut up, and leads in a very straight line. I mean, threads that needle right. I don't know that the Republicans have a guy like that. But even if they win, well, then there might be a bloodbath for them electorally next time around. I mean, we're talking about Kentucky, right? Rand Paul is the one pushing for the most draconian cuts. Right. Kentucky uses Obamacare more than any other state does.
Yeah.
So then all of a sudden, oops.
Kentucky, West Virginia, Arkansas, those are the states. When you look, Tennessee.
So the problem is it would be a literal bloodbath too.
Yeah.
The number of people who will die as a result of that.
Unfortunately, and that's why we don't root for their failures, because their failures affect so many millions of Americans, and we don't want that to happen. We want them to basically lose on the policy so that you guys don't have to deal with the actual real life consequences. So my final proposal is, okay, the first one was called, we'll call it Ryan Care. Okay, so there goes Paul Ryan and his career. Can you call the Senate one Cruz Care? Mm-hmm. and he is the guy saying we don't have to follow the rules, let's just get 50 votes. Mm-hmm. Great, let's call that Cruz Care, kill that one and his career, and then the combined thing will be called Trump Care.
Wipe him out.
That's right. And let's finally, so what I describe as plan B. Plan C that Trump has been hinting at the whole time is, oh, well, why don't we just leave Obamacare and let it fall of its own accord?
Okay,
deal. Deal. Because he's drank his own Kool-Aid, or Steve Bannon's Kool-Aid. He really thinks that Obamacare is about to explode at any second and it's going to be a mess, when it's actually a fine-tuned piece of legislation. It's not anywhere near perfect, and we all got a ton of issues with it, but it is not about to collapse. There is no such thing. That's totally made up. The premiums are too high because they never put a public option in there. They never wound up checking the health insurance companies. It's got its host of problems, but it's not going to collapse. That's not how it works, right? So if they think, oh, it's okay, we'll show those Democrats, leave Obamacare as it is.
They could shut down the website again. Yeah. They could do that.
You know what they should show? They should show us on the climate change policies too. Leave those in place as well while you're at it.
Oh yeah, and the taxes on the rich. Oh man, leave those in place.
Oh, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me.
And the regulations. Leave those in place. That'll show us.
Oh God.
And when you said the poor are paying for the healthy, the healthy are paying for the sick, I'm like, the poor are paying for your tax cuts. Why does it work here in this logic, but not in that logic?
I know. If only we had a Democrat who could also do a press conference. Okay, actual facts. We are out of time, unfortunately, in the first hour. Nomi, you have been excellent.
Thank you for having me.
Everybody check out Nomi's reports on youtube.com/TYTpolitics. And Michael Tracy's up next.
Nomi's on tomorrow as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah, Nomi's on tomorrow, and so is Jordan, so is everybody. And one of the stories we're going to cover in the second hour is, did racial views make a difference for the Trump voters? So was it economic issues? Was it racial issues? It's a very interesting study about that. dives in, and we'll dive into it when we return.